and welcome to the Airman's Edge podcast, an environment to have both personal and professional conversations about some of the positions that the Massachusetts Air National Guard has to offer. I'm your host, Tech Sergeant Tim Thorpe, a member of the Massachusetts Air National Guard's recruiting team. The goal of this podcast is to be both informative and transparent so that those who have contemplated answering the call to serve their local community and do something larger than themselves can make as informed a decision as possible regarding their future in the Air National Guard. Each episode, we will be highlighting one specific career field offered in the Mass Air Guard. With that, we will bring in a new guest to discuss both their career in the Air National Guard and their overall experience through the recruiting process, training, and serving. Today, we will be talking with Master Sergeant Al Cunha and Staff Sergeant Edmund Erickson in their time as serving with Cable and Antenna Operations, career code 1D7X3. Scores needed to go into this career field are 45 mechanical and 60 electrical. Normal color vision and the physical ability to perform climbing duties with freedom of fear of heights is a requirement to go into this career field. The tech school location is Shepherd Air Force Base, located in Texas. The tech school length is 80 days, which is roughly 4 months. The bonus currently affiliated to this career field is $50,000, and the security clearance is secret with the opportunity to potentially go to top secret. And with that, I'd like to welcome both Sergeant Erickson and Sergeant Cunha to the show. It is drill weekend. Driving in, what do we have on the playlist? What was the drive-in song today?
Oh, I don't know. AC/DC.
There we go. All right. I got asked, do we have a specific song?
Not really.
My initials are TNT. So TNT. Like that was, yeah.
Oh, that's
so
a good one.
Yeah. So yeah. That's always like growing up as a kid, like going to sports games, I'd put it on the headphones, get myself hyped up.
Just a podcast.
Welcome. You see that? Full evolution. All right. So just again, we always like to lead off with kind of the beginning. So we have a variety in careers because Sergeant Cunha, you've been here for 20 plus years.
Yes. Yeah, so I have about like 24, 25 years, four active and the rest guard. I've been with engineering installation since 2006. With the 212. I've been full-time the past 7 to 8 years with them as a cable technician.
Awesome. And then the other side is Sergeant Erickson.
Yeah, I was a lot older in life when I joined the military. I joined at 34, started in the Navy, and then transitioned over to the Guard.
Awesome. And it's been 2 years with us, roughly?
Yeah, 2.5 years.
2.5 years.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, welcome. Glad to have you. And I guess kind of going with that theme, the beginning of your process, who was your recruiter, and I guess how did that process go for you?
So I had a recruiter out of Boston. I basically joined when I was in high school. I did the delayed enlistment program, so I actually signed a year prior to actually leaving for basic training. And so I signed, went off to basic training right after I graduated high school. And I was off active duty. So that was kind of my experience, just going, getting dropped off with a bus over at MEPS in Boston. That's why I processed through. Went through, did the processing through there, got evaluated and QA'd, you know, to basically be eligible for the job. And then kind of from there, I went off to basic training, from basic training to tech school. A little bit different on the active duty side of the house, the process.
Of course.
Than the guard.
And just because I'm going to ask over there, tech school for you, where was that?
So that was at Lackland Air Force Base down in Texas.
Awesome.
And then I went, I did a follow-on at Shepherd Air Force Base in Texas as well.
Okay. Very nice. Mm-hmm. And then Sergeant Erickson, very different story as far as where you started and then coming over to us.
Yes, so for me, it was fairly easy going through recruiting when I started with the Navy. A lot of the questions they asked, I kind of knew what to expect. I did try to join when I was 18, but at the time I was joining for the wrong reasons. Fast forward in life, got a second shot at it, was able to go through. It was during COVID, so boot camp for me was very, very different than most. It wasn't what my expectation was because of COVID. But being older and going through boot camp, you kind of got left alone.
That's nice.
You really weren't, treated as a child. because the expectation was higher. Like, they ask you to do something. All right, like, I know they're not physically, like, yelling at me to be mean. It's just their job, so I never let it get to me. As well as the other people that I was with that were closer to my age, like, we were, for the most part, left alone. It was a good experience. It was nothing like I expected. Like, I sure expected to get up at, you know, 3 a.m, being yelled at, screamed at. It was nothing like that.
We always talk about it from the recruiting perspective of, you know, it's obviously very important. It's preparing you for your career in the military. But you know, you have an idea of what's going to come.
Yeah.
And so expect that. And then once you get over that hump, everything else is really just do your job and stay in line.
That's it.
Yeah. And then once you're on the other side of that, now we're moving. Yeah. You know,
it's as simple as, can you follow simple instructions?
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yep.
So I was on the other side where I was young, you know, 18, had no clue. So I looked up to the older folk to be able to, you know, for guidance, and just kept quiet, really, and just do what you're told. I mean, that's really what you need to do just to get through. And it worked.
Of course. So. Yeah. When I was in basic, there was a guy, Airman Siegel, and he was as quiet as a church mouse. And at the end, obviously, there's the awards. And I'm blanking on the name of the award, but that top airman, as you go through, and we had 4 guys, and the first 3 guys, we were like, okay, like, they were really high speed, like, we expected it. And then our MTI, our military training instructor, called the last name Airman Siegel, and it was no different than Moses parting the Red Sea, and he came out of nowhere, and she looked at him, and she's like, I don't know who you are, I don't know what you did, but apparently you did it well. Here's your certificate. And I looked at my buddy, I was like, he won. I was like, that's winning in this game. So, that's awesome. And then obviously transitioning from the Navy to the Air Guard.
Yes.
So Massachusetts is home, I assume?
Yes.
Awesome. And then can you explain that process a little bit?
As far as going from the Navy to the Guard?
Yeah.
So because I was already in the military, my process was very simple. Just a couple forms we had to fill out and certain documents that I had to get, just obviously confirming I am who I am and that I'm in the military. And I mean, my process was easy. It was not difficult.
Love to hear that.
Yeah. It was extremely easy.
From a recruiting standpoint, we love to hear that. Yeah.
But
as far as the most valuable piece of this, specific to cable and antenna, and obviously with a 20 year gap between when you went to tech school and when you went to tech school. So Lackland and Shepherd. And then how about yourself? Where was.
So both of my schools for the Navy and for the Guard were both in Shepherd.
Okay.
Yes.
Very nice. And roughly how long was the tech school for the Guard?
5 months.
5 months. Perfect. And I guess what are some of the things, the training that you feel like you got from tech school that was extremely valuable as far as what we do here at Otis?
So. For me personally, I can say that it was beneficial to be with the unit, the 212th, before I went to tech school. Because we are a guard unit, we do different tasks than the active duty airmen. So a lot of the stuff that I was taught at tech school pertained to the active duty side.
Yep.
But because I already knew what my unit did for a job, it helped me understand where to focus on the most.
Nice. And I guess what would be some of those key takeaways?
Sure. So we do a lot of communication infrastructure installations. So your outside fiber optic cable, outside copper cable if need be, and a lot of internal installations for just a, you know, computer desktop. You need to plug it in, we'll run all the infrastructure for it. Whereas the active duty side, they were being trained on just running base communications.
Okay.
Like the maintenance side of it. So we install it, they would essentially maintain it.
Now, and maybe you can answer this, Sergeant Cunha, because I've always explained to my recruits, and I always say, like, hey, this is a very base level as far as we're going to go talk to the actual experts who know what they're talking about. But I always say it's based on a tier level when you're talking about IT, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, tier 4. And maybe we can kind of break into that a little bit to explain. But I always say from the cable and antenna perspective, it's there's a field somewhere. And somebody decides that, hey, we need communication to that field. And these guys are coming in, like, first boots on the ground to start prepping that ground and the wiring to make sure that that building can have communication technology. Is that a fair assessment of what you guys do?
It is. We're the tier one, right? So that's, you know, we're the first ones in. We run the infrastructure that, you know, you would at that point turn over to the tier two or tier three, right? So we're the backbone.
Of course, the foundation.
The foundation.
Perfect. Yep. And just so this way we can kind of get the perspective of all four tiers. Tier one, exactly what you guys are doing. Yes. Tier two, that's more so the hardware, correct? Is that a fair?
It's a mix. It's really like tier two, tier three, I would say, that with the hardware, with the network configuration and everything.
Okay. And then tier four, we're talking more servers, cloud. Things up in, you know, up in the air on the computer side, correct? Yes. All right, perfect. Yes. Just kind of following through, so we have tech school. Now we're back at Otis. What's some of the day-to-day that you guys are doing here?
So myself, full-time-wise, we prep for our DSGs to be able to come in and train for the drill weekend. So we basically set them up to come in for the training, and we have a training area out back of our in our training yard out back of our building, and then we have another training area in the warehouse that we basically we'd prepare them to be able to come in and then be able to get proficient with their skills on a typical drill weekend.
Awesome. Very nice. Mm-hmm. And then what are some of the struggles that you guys find in the field, like as far as, you know, what's something that makes this job hard or difficult?
On-site engineering.
Can you explain a little further on that?
Sure. We do, you know, a job will be essentially put on paper, handed over to us, and as we get started, you know, maybe there was, you know, we'll use this room for an example. You know, we got to get a data line into here. You know, maybe the person checked a couple tiles, you know, the ceiling tiles, but didn't check them all. And all of a sudden we have a wall that, you know, wasn't expected to be there that's now there. So, like, this wall, say, it goes from the floor all the way up, and the assumption was it only went to the top of the drop ceiling. So an on-site engineering would be, now how do we get through that wall? Is it a fire-rated wall? Do we have to make sure we seal up any holes when we're done? But that's also not just the military. It's also civilian side.
Well, that actually kind of leads perfectly into exactly where I was going next. What are some of the civilian careers where these skills are transferable to?
So you have a plethora of careers working for Verizon, working for just even like lineman type work, going in for like Eversource. We do training on towers and poles that would relate to those type of companies out there, or any type of telecommunications company running low voltage data for networks, for office buildings, or even electrical companies. So there's a lot of different industries that you could get into telecommunication wise. Like, those are just a few of the bigger like companies that those skills would relate to, that the training that they get coming through, that they'll be able to go and get vetted and get hired on to these companies.
Wow. Okay. And I did hear you say climbing towers.
Yes.
How about both of you guys? What's the highest you've been?
Mine was just, for now, the one I've done through tech school, which was, I think it was 110 feet.
Yep. Nope. That's not me. Okay.
Yeah. It's not that bad.
Yeah. You say so. It's okay.
For me, 250 feet.
Wow. Okay.
So, when I was active duty way back when, back in the early 2000s, I was stationed down in Maryland. And we had a big antenna farm. We would have to go out and do maintenance on the towers. We would have a whole bunch of 100-foot towers that we would have to climb. In one day, I climbed 12 to prep for a big storm.
Wow.
So, but then we had some other different styles. That one of them was a 250-footer. There's a big beacon light on the top that we'd have to go up every once in a while and switch out the bulb.
Wow. Okay.
Quite the experience.
Yeah, and I imagine through the training, like, just as you said, Sergeant Erickson, like, it's not that bad. Like, you must develop just that comfort.
So, obviously, me being older, I spent 15 years prior working for Comcast.
Okay.
So I started with them, and when I started with them, I had a tremendous fear of heights. But learning that the equipment we are given to do our job, the safety equipment, it's learning that trusting that equipment is what helps you get over that fear. So somebody coming in that has never climbed anything more than, say, like a 4-foot step ladder, and now you're handed all this gear to climb, whether it's a telephone pole or a tower, you're like, how is this rope going to hold me? You know, this quarter-inch rope, three-quarter-inch rope, whatever it may be, how is it going to hold me? And you realize that what the label says it's designed to hold, it's usually rated for a lot more than that. So it's definitely getting comfortable with your safety equipment.
That's fair. I can definitely see that. And then just obviously there are times where you guys deploy. What does a deployment schedule look like for your unit specifically? And then where are some of the places you've been?
So for a deployment cycle, we're on a 3-year rotation that we're in like a bucket. And typically it's voluntary. We try not to mandate people. I mean, obviously the situations where we have to, you know, you're voluntold, you have to go. But that's few and far between. We actually have guys that are going out the door. Right now they're down at field training, currently going through doing some pre-deployment training. So they'll be headed over to the Middle East. We've had deployments over to Europe, Africa. So we're all over. We currently have teams that are deployed out in Hawaii.
That's so a nice problem.
Sometimes yeah. There's some nice locations.
They all sound nice. Yeah, that's what I meant.
They're austere.
Yeah, right? Of so course.
It just kind of where you land, you know.
Nice.
So,
how and between the two of you, where's been your favorite place that you've been?
Deployment, TDY.
Either.
Oh, that's a hard one. I enjoy the deployments. Jordan, I would say, over in the Middle East. I spent 7 months over there, so that was interesting being over there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very nice. And how about yourself, Sergeant Erickson?
So as far as deployments go, I'm coming up on my first one, so I'll let you know how that goes when I get back.
And where are you heading?
Middle East.
Okay.
But for TDYs, I've enjoyed thus far probably going to Pennsylvania, because we have, as part of our career field, we have like a separate education, advanced training, I guess you could call it, that we can go to in Fort Indiantown Gap, and I like going there, as well as you can kind of use it for like a little family vacation.
Of course.
Last year I went, and family came out during the weekend, and we went to Gettysburg. So doing stuff like that was fun.
Very nice. And this is my fault, but TDY, temporary deployment. Yeah. So just a shorter deployment.
Yes.
Yep. So exactly to your point, as far as nice way to kind of bundle in a family vacation.
Absolutely.
Yes, of course. Sorry.
Yeah, just to add, so our training is our workload. So every year we typically have a lot of, we have like 3 to 4 jobs that we're able to schedule and get guys out on to develop the training and everything and keep proficient. So there's always opportunities for travel, going out to Hawaii, going out on these small 1 week, 2 week work trips. And then you add on deployments. So there's a lot of travel opportunities in with the engineering installation community.
Very nice. Yeah. And I guess to kind of put a bow on the whole thing, if you could give one piece of advice to somebody who's interested in the career field, they're coming in, what would be that most valuable piece of advice that you could give them? And I guess we'll go over to both of you.
Kind of have a goal, right? I mean, we all want to have a goal, right? Career-wise and just self-development. Your career is what you make it. Embrace it. Embrace the suck. You have to sometimes. It's the military, right? So you're not always going to be doing things that you want to do, but follow those orders, and in the end, there's great opportunities, and it's very fulfilling.
I think that's great. As far as talking to even the recruits, to that point exactly, when I was in my previous unit, it wasn't probably the career field that was tailored for me. But even on those days where it was like, oh man, like this is dragging, I think if you, there's always perspective. If you look at what this product is and what it offers you between transferable skills, the benefits, all those things, and you really put that on the weight of the moment that you're frustrated, I think it more often tips the scales and the idea of like you're in a good situation. Right. And that's, you know, the value of this whole thing where we're fortunate to be in. And yourself, Sergeant Erickson, as far as that advice?
I would say for somebody coming in, stick to what you want to do and don't just go by what your recruiter tells you. And the reason I say that is that was kind of an experience I was going through when I was going for the Navy. Because of what my testing was on my ASVAB score, they were trying to push me into another career field. And I just said, no, just call me when mine becomes available. And miraculously, within a couple of days, there was an opening for my career field, and I was able to do it. And going through boot camp, there were a lot of frustrated kids that didn't have that luxury, that they just said, I'm doing this because my recruiter said it was all that was available. And coming over to the Guard, I like the setup that we have here because of the, whether it's just coming in to do an interview like this or a shadow day. And that was something I got when I was looking to come to the Guard, is I actually came to the unit and spent probably 4 or 5 hours just asking questions as far as what they do, what's a drill like, to help me actually make that decision so I could transfer what I do in the civilian world to the military, because that's something that I want to stay with, is this industry.
Again, I couldn't agree more. As the recruiter, I always try to explain to my applicants is I try to be a career party planner. Mm-hmm. And essentially with this product and the steps, just as you labeled out, that we have before enlistment, I always try to explain, look, if you want, it's your wedding and you want daisies on the table, or everything you're telling me tells me that you want daisies on the table, and wedding day's the next day and you look at me and you go, oh, no, I want lilacs. I go, well, that's strange. Everything you told me was, you know, daisies. Mm-hmm. And they go, no, lilacs. I go, this is your wedding. That's what you want. That's what we're going to aim for. So we try to put the onus on our members, not just from the standpoint of we want you to get what you want, but it's also a retention tool. If you're in a career that, you know, you chose, that you believed in, your goals are going to make you happy, you're more likely to stay with us. And again, the more people who stay, the less I have to recruit.
So. And with that, I will say the one thing that I find that is a good caveat to that is the fact that if you don't like your career, you can change it.
Of course.
Like, there are a lot of people that I work with in the unit that came from different career fields. They didn't start in this career field. They transitioned over to it. So just because you get into something and you don't like it, that's not necessarily an excuse to get out, but chop around. Look for something that benefits you.
I couldn't agree more. And again, that's coming from personal experience.
Yeah, the hottest part is getting in. You're already in.
Correct.
Stay in.
We're going to end right there because I couldn't agree more. I want to thank you both so much for coming in, sharing your expertise. Thank you again, and just really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching. And I'd like to thank our guests and our fantastic public affairs team at the 102nd for helping produce this content. This is as new of a series as can be. Therefore, if there is something you would like to see in a future episode, or you have a question regarding the information in this episode, please do not hesitate to ask a question or leave us some feedback in the comments. If you have questions regarding your own future in the Mass Air Guard, please feel free to scan this QR code to fill out a contact card for one of our fantastic recruiters to be in touch with you. Finding out whether or not you can serve requires zero commitment. So if you have ever had even the most mild interest, find out if you have the authority to join. Contact your local recruiter and see how the Mass Air Guard can assist you in achieving your goals. Thank you for watching, and we hope this helps in giving you an edge in planning your future.